The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Welcome you back. Second hour is live, and yesterday we spent a lot of time talking about the LSU situation. It's still a little bit difficult to make much sense out of. We'll find out more about what could be going on today, or has gone on, or didn't go on, from our next guest. He is Brody Miller from The Athletic. Brody, great to have you on. I know that this should be a time of the year when people like you are concentrating on the quarterback race at LSU, but with all the off-the-field events, I'm sure it has been a mind-numbing spring. Good afternoon, and tell us all about it.
Hey, Paul, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been a wild few weeks and months and past year in Baton Rouge here. I mean, shoot, the other day, for example, I'm pretty sure in the span of one day there was news of an LSU associate athletic director suing the school for $50 million, then several LSU employees releasing statements to a state Senate committee hearing about why they're not coming. Then you have an LSU receiver body cam footage of him, you know, when he alleged police brutality against him. You know, then that body cam footage got released. And an hour after that, there was a new Department of Education federal investigation going into LSU. So it just seems like there's something new going on about every 20 minutes here in Baton Rouge. But of course, today was the Louisiana State Senate Select Committee hearing on women and children, where the plan was for today to be primarily, you know, a day to really talk to a lot of LSU representatives, including, you know, the athletic department, the board of supervisors, about a lot of these issues with the Title IX department. But instead, it actually turned into more of a casual dunking on those people for not showing up, and their defense for not showing up, as their lawyer Winston DeCour quite clearly said, was that because they are in this lawsuit against Sharon Lewis, he does not want them to speak and put themselves at further legal risk. So it turned into a bit of a dunking on them for not showing up and defending themselves. So it's a bit of a mess in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, and Brody, that is sound legal advice, except we're talking about the people that fund the university here. How, what was said, as best you're able to tell us?
Yeah, I think the main thing that he, Winston DeCour, mainly talked about was how, you know, I think there was a big grilling from this committee, as it has been for the last few hearings, I should say, that they're angry that there have not been more firings, that there has not been any real action taken, that it has been mainly just that, hey, the system's broken and we're trying to fix it without any consequences. And I think, you know, Mr. DeCour's, you know, response to that was primarily, and this is his word for word, he said, we're not trying to fix one incident of bad behavior. And he basically said it's about a system for handling Title IX problems that was simply not set up correctly. And I think a lot of people had issue with that was a bit of a way to avoid, you know, saying anything. And I think what's really come out of these last few weeks, though, is just the fact that I think to some extent LSU expected the Hush Blackwell investigation to make things, you know, this was their due diligence to look into this, and it would maybe go away, right? And it has not. And Karen Carter Peterson, for example, one of the state senators, basically said heads need to roll, and she said that pretty confidently. And now there's even talk of and I don't know if it will actually happen. There's debate over they have the power or not, but there may be some of these people may be subpoenaed to come talk. And now you have that federal investigation coming, which obviously will have a little more jurisdiction to make more people talk and to do more things. So I think there's definitely a sense that there's more to come here.
Brody, of all these various events going on simultaneously, which one, and you may have already answered it a minute ago, which one is the most concerning to LSU?
I think that would have to be the second Department of Education investigation going on right now, because I think the thing that kind of gets lost in a lot of this, and it's something that a lot of people, for example, Morgan Lemondre from Stars, brought up quite often, is that the Hush Blackwell investigation is damning as it was, as troubling as it was, it was pretty much focused on the things that were already publicly known by the USA Today reporting, and credit to them. It was mainly focusing on things that were already known and diving into those and what were the problems with those and how did they happen. But, and as Ms. Lemondre has said many times, it actually, there's so much that has not come out yet. There is so much more detail that she believes people need to know that would make it even worse. And obviously, I don't know any of that information. I'm not pretending there is or isn't. But I think that has to scare a lot of people at LSU, that if that was just a limited scope into what was going on there, and now you have a federal body actually looking into these things and putting more pressure, and you would assume being able to get more information, I think that definitely has a lot of people at LSU the most scared, and that's why you're seeing so many people, you know, lawyer up right now. You're seeing Miriam Seeger hire a very prominent Louisiana attorney recently to defend her and why she did not speak today. So I think you're seeing a lot of people lawyer up and kind of get a little nervous.
Let's talk about Scott Woodward for a second, because you know, he was brought in to calm the waters. He had a great reputation. He also knows everybody in town. He's from there. He's about as politically connected. And I know there's been some chirping about him, but what can he do right now? Because that doesn't seem like this is the buck stops at the athletic director's chair, does it?
It really is tricky because, you know, so much of the Hush Blackwell investigation, for example, or the USA Today reporting, or, you know, the Les Miles investigation, those were things that in theory happened while he was not there. And I think that's kind of been his way of staying out of, you know, being the one who's criticized the most for this. And I think that's what's going to make this interesting. But as to your question of what he can do, you know, I think a lot of people at the state Senate committee or a lot of people in Baton Rouge in general would say he should be, you know, firing some of these people. And I don't know whether that's the answer. That's not my place to say. But I think that's the thing a lot of people would like to see. But I don't know what he can do. And for example, this Department of Education investigation, that is going to focus more in the last 3 years, for example. That is requesting every Title IX complaint from, I believe, 2018, 2019, and 2020. So that is most of the Woodward era. So maybe more comes out about what happened under his watch. I don't know. But it's a great question you ask. I just don't know if I have a great answer other than I think his main thing is just kind of saying, hey, most of this didn't happen under my watch, and we'll see how long that holds up.
Yeah, well, some of these people that we mentioned are important players. They're not that well known, even the athletic director. So let's get to the best known of all the people who did not show up today, and that's Coach O. Yeah, he's won a national championship. You would think you could pocket that for a long time in Baton Rouge, especially if you come from where he does. But you know, what is his most vulnerable exposure in all this?
Yeah, I think the main focus on him because, for example, you mentioned the Hush Blackwell report. You read that, I mean, Ed Orgeron was almost never mentioned in that, right? I mean, it looked like, you know, for lack of a better term, he came out of that kind of, you know, insulated from everything going on there. But then, obviously, Gloria Scott, as you know, a 74-year-old woman alleging that Darius Geis sexually harassed her at the Superdome in 2017. She, you know, alleged at one of these hearings that she spoke to Ed Orgeron about it and talked to him about it. And now this has become a very messy situation because obviously the number one issue on so many people's minds is, did Ed Orgeron know about anything Darius Geis did? And if so, you know, why did he not take any action against him? Why did he spend that spring in that draft process defending his character so adamantly while people criticized him, all these things? I think that's the number one thing people are trying to figure out, and it's become so convoluted these last few days because, you know, there's been the news of that, you know, maybe a representative for Gloria Scott tried to extort LSU for $100,000. There's debate of whether Scott and Orgeron ever talked at all. There's debate over who Orgeron spoke to and what exactly he knew. And in his letter to the committee when he did not speak, he wrote a statement, and he wrote that, you know, he did speak to a representative about Geis not disrespecting a woman, I guess was his words, I believe, in his letter. And he was aware of that, and they wanted to make him sit out the game. And he said, you know, I'm not going to do that without more information. That's, according to his letter, the extent of it. And I think that's what makes this all so tricky, is we're still at a point where it's hard to prove what exactly he did or did not know. But I think that's the main focus on him right now.
I say this somewhat jokingly, Brody, but how's the spring practice coming along?
It's the tricky thing in every one of these press conferences lately where we have to ask these questions, and there's that awkward part where it's like, who's going to be the one to ask how the quarterback competition is going? But I believe in the grand scheme of things, it has been a pretty promising spring for LSU, just in the sense that I think, you know, the buzz out of there is that there are drastic changes with the new coaching staff and a better vibe there, communications better, things like that. Because, I mean, you know as well as I, the talent in that room is always good enough to be a top 15 program by default. It almost highlights some of the issues in that last 2020 staff. So they believe that they have really exciting pieces. They have a lot of talent, and obviously that quarterback competition has them a little excited.
Brody, thank you very much. Complicated case. You did a great job. Hope you'll come back soon.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
Take care. Got it. Great stuff. Wow. We are heading to a break. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. Back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Hey, welcome back here on a Thursday afternoon. Philip is up next. Good afternoon, Philip.
Good afternoon, Paul. I've enjoyed your discussion with Brody. I hope your first caller that afternoon heard that. he may have already gone down to apply for the job of athletic director. He may not have had his radio on. But I was calling about the call from Tom in Tuscaloosa. You correctly told him that after the 78 and 79 championships, that Alabama had not been in a position to win the 1980 championship because of the two losses. But I think he may have been talking about the 77 team.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That was a team that got jobbed, didn't it?
Got jobbed by Notre Dame.
Of course.
66 and 77. And that would have been a three-peat. But Alabama finished second to Notre Dame. And it was ironic. It turned out that in the UPI poll, Steve Sloan did not vote. And one of the columnists in the Birmingham News pointed out that if Sloan had voted Alabama one and Notre Dame, he would have had to put Notre Dame fifth or sixth. Alabama would have enough points to overtake them. But Notre Dame probably was the second-best team that year, so it wouldn't have made that much difference. But
Wasn't that because he was leaving from Texas Tech to Ole Miss?
I think you're right.
Yeah, I remember
sure
that.
Mother sent me the articles from the Post Herald when you wrote one, but you weren't at Post Herald in 70.
No, I was still in college.
Okay, well that explains why I don't have anything about the Post Herald from you in my 77 file.
No, you wouldn't have gotten that till probably 80.
Okay, well I didn't know of you, so I don't have anything from the Tennessee.
Yeah, but you know I do remember that year very well because I was a sports editor of the school paper and I was really into SEC football as you could imagine. I believe Notre Dame that year lost to Ole Miss. Alabama beat Ole Miss. And Alabama's loss was, what, to Nebraska or Southern Cal or something like
Nebraska. They beat Southern Cal the week after they lost to.
I've always thought, Philip, that was amazing for all the criticism Brian took in 66. In 77, I don't remember the whole schedule. I can look it up. He played Nebraska and Southern Cal back to back. I mean, how tough could
sure did.
How ridiculous is that?
He was the athletic director who made that schedule too. He must have seen something in recruiting that gave him the idea he could do something with it. But Bryant never ran away from anybody. He always started every year, if you remember. With a big game on Nebraska or Southern Cal or starting in 1970, you know.
Okay, here it is. I called up the schedule, and the opening game was against Ole Miss. The second game was at Nebraska, at Vandy, then Georgia at home, and then at Southern Cal. So, I mean, just think about this for a second. Alabama was at Nebraska. And then at Southern Cal, and I believe Southern Cal was number one in the country at the time. So
they were beating them by 1 point.
Yeah, 21-20. I mean, that is just in one season in 1977, and they did not win the title. Alabama played at Nebraska, at Southern Cal, number one in the country, and at LSU in Tiger Stadium.
Yeah, that was an amazing schedule. But if you look at 78 schedule,
yeah.
I don't have it in front of me, but they played.
Yeah, it also had Miami was on that schedule too.
Yeah, they had a quarterback named Jim Kelly.
Yeah,
you may remember he did some things in the pros, but
just another illegitimate Notre Dame national championship, and a guy in my ear is belly aching the whole time I'm saying this. Hey, Kubiak, if you want to talk, get your own show, okay? This is the Alabama Network.
There you go. Good man, Paul.
I mean, he is just, he's given me the entire Notre Dame schedule in 77. Like the two of us really care, Philip.
Well, yeah, I give a rat about Notre Dame's. After they lost to Ole Miss, their only loss was we beat them by 20 points. So,
hey, by the way, the schedule in 78 wasn't that much easier. Nebraska at Missouri, and Missouri was number 11
very
in the
good.
Country, and then Southern Cal at home, which was ranked number one in the country, and then, by the way, then at Washington, I'm sure you remember that game.
Oh yeah, that was a tough game. We only beat him by 5 or 6 points
right.
out there, and then Penn State in the Sugar Bowl.
But Alabama did eke out the title that year.
Yeah, we did eke it out by beating Penn State. What was it, Gooman, that got stopped on the fourth?
I think it was.
Well, those were two great teams. I just wish that the 77 team had not been Kubiak'd. So we could have.
Mark Kubiak is—he's just called called ESPN. He's bought some time to rebut this. So
please give him my best, okay?
I will.
All right.
Thank you, Paul. Yeah, I mean, I've said many times that soon we hope to be able to be back to where we were a year ago, but this is one time where not hearing from Kubiak is really a blessing from the sky.
Hold on. 1977, Alabama beat USC by 1 point. Lousy point.
Can we hear you?
Am I the only team and beat them 49-19?
Am I the only one hearing you, Mark?
Notre Dame played three top 10 teams that year. Beat them all.
I'd like to know how. Hey, stop! Stop the presses. How did Kubiak get on the air? I don't remember allowing this to happen.
I'm just saying, I have to hear about.
Okay, go ahead, Mark.
I have to hear about 77.
Philip and I are going to be quiet now. It's all yours.
No. I'm just at 66, 77. What other is 73 legitimate, or is Alabama claiming that one still?
I hope somebody's reporting you to the authorities right now.
I can only take so much, Paul.
Hey, Mark, I got news for you. If you want to promote Notre Dame, call the ACC Network, okay? I think you know their number.
They left that conference.
Oh, they did. I forgot. They're not in the ACC anymore in football. That must have just been a passing fancy, a flash in the pan.
That's right. That was just a quick one.
I could have sworn they played for the ACC championship a couple of months ago. I must have been dreaming. Anyway, Mark, thanks for the call. Now go back to work. We are going to take a break here. More of your phone call. Kubiak intercedes on the show. We are going to take a break. We have more guests coming, more after this message.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Welcome back here Thursday afternoon, and we will continue with your phone calls in a minute. We talked yesterday about some chatter about the Aggies making a run at number one. Certainly they came in fourth last year, their best finish in most of our lifetime. Billy Lucci covers the team, knows all about it. Billy, thank you very much for joining us again, and I want you to tell us straight now, is this we're number one conversation legitimate?
I don't know if I'd have them as a preseason number one, and the main reason why, Paul, is they lost a lot of what made them so good last year, and that was that offensive line, that front four, that front five on offense. They lost four of those five. And they lost a three-and-a-half-year starting quarterback in Kellen Mond that I thought was at times really underappreciated even by the A&M fans. It felt like he got a little more respect even throughout the SEC in terms of what he could do. I think people here in College Station kind of had him under a little too much of a microscope because of the familiarity. So they lose a lot there. But, man, they return a lot too, Paul. And they've got momentum. Jimbo Fisher has built a culture. They really lose two guys, probably. I don't know if I'm exaggerating if I say they lose about two of the top 22 on defense, and a lot of guys off of that number 7 ranked recruiting class coming in. Some of the guys that are most ready to play are on the defensive side. So I think in 4 years, this will be Mike Elko's best defense, and they led the SEC in defense last year. They're going to run the football. They lose a lot up front, but they return a potential All-American in Kenyon Green, and then you guys know as well as anybody that's watched them what they have in the way of that running game. So the question mark's going to be at O-line and quarterback. So I have a hard time putting a team that high. Of course, I guess that's what we're doing with Alabama because they're kind of looking to replace the same thing. But they're Bama. They've been doing it for 15 years. A&M has just done it, you know, this past year in terms of finishing in the top five. But, man, they're very close, Paul. They're very close. And I think if you look at the schedule – you see Alabama coming in mid-October, game six. It wouldn't shock me at all if Texas A&M was 5-0. We're looking at the schedule right now. If Texas A&M was 5-0 on a 13-game winning streak with Bama coming in, where the last team that beat Texas A&M would have been Alabama. I don't think that's far-fetched at all when you look at the way things lay out. And then you look at the rest of that schedule and you say, A&M's got their question marks, but I can go up and down the line there and go, for the second year in a row, they do have a manageable schedule.
No, I would go so far, Billy, to say that is a fantastic schedule. And, yeah, LSU at the end is inevitable, but you know, when Colorado is your big marquee game, and you know they're a good program, but come on, they're not going to beat A&M. And you have Alabama in your place, you can make a lot of noise.
I mean, and you look at last year, and it fell out right for them. Tennessee and Florida look like brutal additions in place of Colorado and San Jose State. Well, Tennessee, by the time A&M played them, they stunk. And Florida was really good. You caught them at Kyle Field and last-second win. Again, you're not going to go through the SEC. I'm not a lifer like a lot of the people following these teams and like you are, but I'm going into year 10 now, right? 10 years of this, and there have been three schedules that stand out to me, and one of them was last year, and the other one was 2012. If you go back and look at the SEC, A&M's first year in, we didn't know it at the time, but it was kind of ripe for the picking. And I think this schedule falls in line with those two, and those have been A&M's two best years. The difference is they've had really dynamic, or they had a dynamic weapon at quarterback in that first year, and then they had a fourth-year starter and a senior this past year. This year they'll have a first-year starter under center.
Let's talk about the quarterback situation. And before we do, I just want to pause. Kellen Mond is getting a lot of attention lately. What are you sensing in relation to Kellen in the draft before we come back to the QB situation now?
I talked to a guy who has been an NFL head coach who said he was at the Senior Bowl. He has been to the Senior Bowl for at least a decade straight. Said he thought he's never seen a quarterback help himself and have as good a week at the Senior Bowl as Kellen Mond did. And he meant picking up the offense as compared to his peers and past quarterbacks. He meant the actual game. He meant the practices. He meant sitting there in the individual meetings, the meeting rooms, all of it. Thought he helped himself that much. And he thought Kellen would not get out of the third round. And his opinion was someone would end up taking him late second, but he said he won't get out of the third. And that was before a really good pro day workout, Paul, where Kellen was slinging it really. He throws it for whatever reason. I think people don't expect that he'll make. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what – when you look on tape, you can find him. But when you see him in person, he's got a big league NFL arm, and then he ran a 4.56 or so at – almost 215 pounds and all the experience and, you know, playing in under Jimbo Fisher for 3 years, I think has meant the world to him in terms of his NFL prospects.
So back to present day, what's it look like in terms of who is next?
It's, you know, there's a true freshman that's really talented in Eli Stowers. He's practiced all of five times. Haynes King and Zach Calzada, who I think are going to battle this out. Zach's entering year three. He's out of Georgia. A&M held on to him over the Bulldogs right before signing day, right after Justin Fields left, actually. They tried to keep him in state last minute. He's the guy with the big arm who, you know, can really sling it. And then Haynes King, Paul, I have a feeling that Haynes King will introduce himself to the SEC this season. I think he's an incredibly talented guy. He's generating all kinds of buzz. He's a head coach's son, a 6A state champion, big recruiting win actually over Tennessee for the Aggies a couple years ago. And all he's done since he's been here is impressed. Actually, the fastest guy on the team when they tested 40s this offseason. Now, caveat, Devon Achain was running track. So I'll give him that mantle after seeing what I saw down the stretch in the SEC and in the Orange Bowl. But Haynes King clocked a really mid 4.4s, I think a 4.46, and he's certainly not just a runner. I would say he's the very definition of a dual threat. So if he wins the job, which he'll have to do, and Calzada's been around, I've also heard his mental side of the game is next level. Like, even going in the fourth quarter at Alabama last year, you got guys still talking about kind of, hey, Haynes, what do we need to run here? What do you need? And he says, Coach, I know everything. We'll do whatever you want. And you combine that with that athleticism, and I think he's got just that those natural the competitor, the winner, the leader, and playmaking skill. He should be fun to watch, Paul.
Billy, back to the elephant in the room, Alabama. And, you know, Georgia folks have had a couple of close encounters. Not many others have. What do you see and what do you sense from the people with whom you speak from where things are now that to give Aggie fans legitimate reason to think they can beat Alabama?
I think there's been, if you look at the last, I guess since Jimbo's gotten here, Bama's pulled away like right before halftime in all three. But I think they've played in those games and they've successfully moved the ball, if you go back and look. And I think they see areas where it's just like, gosh, we just have to get better players, better athletes, you know, on the perimeters. You look at what those receivers, and they do it to everybody. I get it. but it was particularly, you know, a matchup problem when A&M's played Bama the last 3 years, is those receivers versus the A&M back seven. It's been, you know, more of a problem than it's been for other teams, and it certainly killed A&M in those matchups. They've stopped the run. They've lined up and run the football with some success, particularly this past year. They moved it really well. Again, talking to some NFL guys that are watching, they're calling me right now about these Aggie players, and they're saying, you watch the tape right now, and Texas A&M looks like Alabama and Georgia do on the lines of scrimmage, both offensive and defensive. Where the separation has been is kind of at the skill spots, and I think A&M's getting there. They're there at running back. They're there at QB, tight end. They need to upgrade, I think, playmaking ability on the perimeter at wide receiver. And then that secondary has made big strides, but you're talking about Jamar Chase and Jefferson and Terrace Marshall and all those guys at Alabama and doing that 3-4 times a year against those kind of teams. So I think that's where it's at, Paul. It's recruiting. And if you look at how they've recruited, Jimbo's gone, I think, number 3, number 6, number 7, and right now working on what I'm 100% convinced is going to be a top 5 class. So to me, that's the only way you do it. It's time and it's belief. And I think this year is important from the belief standpoint, Paul. You've got Bama coming into Kyle. You've made games competitive with them for a half the last 3 years, and then they've pulled away and kind of smoked you. So you've got to start showing some confidence on the field against them this fall at home early in the year. You're kind of rebuilding at some spots, but so are they. So I think this is an important game in terms of Texas A&M, and are they going to have the confidence to play with Alabama, you know, for a several-year stretch? Because the recruiting's setting up, you've got the head coach, you've got a quarterback, regardless of who starts, you're going to have a multi-year guy. So, you got to beat them in this little window, and you can't just sit around and go, well, Saban will be done soon, because, heck, as you and I both know, he might be coaching until he's 80, if not 85, if you're not careful. So you can't do that, and I think it's time for A&M to, even if they don't beat Bama, really come out and make that one of those games that leaves everybody talking, because that might have been what kept them out of the playoff last year. And if you look at that schedule we just looked at, if the Aggies are, say, the 6th, 7th, 8th best team in college football, the 8th best team in college football probably goes, you know, they go 11-1 or 10-2 on that schedule. So, again, if you play Bama close at home, maybe that's what gets you in. Here's the thing that's positive for me in terms of the head-to-head, Paul. Just from talking to a lot of players, and forget yesterday and someone saying, I believe we're the best in the country. It's the fact that the Aggies really wanted to get into the playoffs last year, knowing that they would probably play Bama. And they weren't scared of that. They wanted to play Bama again because they felt like they should have played better against them after being on the field for 4 quarters. They felt like they let that get away from them. So maybe, I'm just saying, maybe that's the first step, the belief.
A lot of conversation about the Aggies. Billy, great to see you and have you on, and we will see you very soon. It's always fun.
All right, Paul. Look forward to seeing you guys at Media Days. And don't let Booger tell you that he...
Nobody listens to Booger, so I appreciate that heads up. Hey, thanks, Billy. Great to see you.
I'm here.
We are heading to a break. Exactly. Laura Rutledge will join us in a couple of minutes to give her take on all these subjects in the NFL draft, which is 3 weeks from tonight. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And we welcome you back. Great to have you here. You can still give us a ring at 855-242-7285. And let me see, Jeremy is up next. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Paul, man, I love your show. Love you.
Thank you so much.
You kept me company many an afternoon.
Thank you very much.
So, hey, thanks for what you do. Man, I just wanted to bend your ear for a moment. And I know that the city of Tuscaloosa is very near and dear to your heart.
No doubt.
And I work at a nonprofit here in Tuscaloosa called Youth for Christ. And, I mean, it basically is what it says. You know, we try to help middle school and high school students, you know, find the best way. And we recruit and use the college students here to train them and do it. It's pretty neat, but you know, stuff like that, you gotta raise money to do it. And I didn't come on here to ask you for money, so don't worry. but Saturday we are doing our biggest fundraiser of the year. It's called Over the Edge, and you're familiar with downtown Tuscaloosa,
of course.
We've got in the neighborhood of 60, 70 people that have all fundraised a certain amount. And they're all going to rappel one at a time off the Trustmark building. And you know where that is.
Sure.
So we've had some business sponsorships that, you know, love us, love what we do, want to support us, but they're not sending anybody to take their rappel spot. And Paul, my friend, I wanted to offer you a spot and see if you wanted to come rappel with us Saturday in Tuscaloosa.
Jeremy, I can't tell you how much I would love to be there Saturday. I'm not going to be able to make it this Saturday, but I will be there a Saturday very soon. So hold me the spot, will you?
Well, I'll tell you what, when we plan the next one, man, I'll get back on the show.
No, by all means.
It
sounds like a fantastic organization. And I will make you a commitment that the next time, just let me know in advance and I'll give it every available possibility, and I think it's realistic in the future.
Wow! Hey, that means the world to me, Paul. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and all the best on Saturday, Jeremy. Thanks for calling, my friend, and hope to see you soon.
Hey, God bless you.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Great to hear from you. Rick is up next in Tennessee. Hello, Rick. Thanks. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. How's it going?
Well, thank you.
Shout out to Jeremy. Hope you have great success. Man, you've had so much on your show today. I just got to rant about a few things I've heard.
Okay.
Number one, yeah, I remember 77, and you're right, and that caller was right. Notre Dame, that's one of those times Notre Dame should not have been the national champion. Somebody from the South should have been. You know, that happened also in 39 when Tennessee went undefeated, didn't give up a single point, but finished number two to Notre Dame. So that has happened more than once. And that's why Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Oklahoma are three teams I never care for, because they're always overrated and get more publicity than they deserve. Number two, I appreciate the A&M people's enthusiasm. I'm good to hear. I've been a college football fan since 71 when I first started listening and following it. And A&M has had some good football teams, but they ain't never won a national title. They've had some good quarterbacks, but they ain't never had the quarterback. So if they can produce the quarterback, they got a really good chance. But I like Jimbo. I like what he's doing. I like their overall roster. They're a good-looking football team. They just got to have somebody at quarterback who can produce in big games. That's been their problem.
No, you're right. Hey, listen, Rick, thank you for the call. I hate to run, but we are heading to the exits here for the first half of the program. We will continue with your phone calls. I know we've been very guest-heavy, but we have time for you in a couple of minutes at 855-242-7285. And many more guests to come, including our next guest, Laura Rutledge. You may have heard of her.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.